John Abercrombie is a jazz guitarist, and Mark Copeland, a pianist, both jazz musicians, of course. And I caught up with them just before their gig at the Watermill Jazz Club in Dorking. John Abercrombie, guitarist, made his name on the music scene. He was playing originally with the likes of Johnny Hammond Smith and the Brecker Brothers, although he really became noticed when he started recording on the ECM label. His style of guitar playing was often understated with lines that were influenced by jazz guitar, but had an individuality about them. He also recorded using guitar synthesizers, giving his playing a real contemporary feel. He's joined on this gig by pianist Mark Copeland, and he became a familiar name to me after Brit jazz guitarist Phil Robson recorded with him. He's appeared as a sideman to such artists as John Scofield and Joe Lovano, and has recorded with arranger Vince Mendoza and, of course, John Abercrombie. So I've got John Abercrombie here. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank
and,
you.
And Mark Copeland. You two have had a working relationship since Chico Hamilton's band in the 1970s. And I noticed...
That's an ugly rumor.
Is it? We're actually
both 19 years old.
Okay. Okay. I noticed on your website, John, that it said you recorded an album in 2013 called 39 Steps for ECM, which, as I understand, is Mark, your first recording for ECM.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay, good. Correct. And you two have a history of playing together. I just wonder what it was like coming together for that album and also this tour.
The album was something that I hadn't even planned to record it. I mean, we had just started playing together and we had this quartet and we went on tour and Manfred Eicher from ECM Records heard us play at a concert in Lugano, Switzerland, and he just got very excited. He said, you should record this band. And it's not like it hadn't crossed my mind, but I hadn't planned on it. But then when he discovered us, you know.
Fantastic.
I mean, up to that point, anything John and I did together had been for an assortment of other European labels that I'd been recording for. But then Manfred jumped in and it was great. You know, and we just did earlier this year? I'm trying to remember. Anyway, a few months ago we did a follow-up album, which is coming out, I'm not sure when this interview will air, but it's coming out January 2017.
Is that a duo or is that a quartet?
No, that's quartet.
Okay.
And we've been talking about doing a duo album. But back to the new release, it's I think John and I both have a similar take on it, which is it's the first album's really nice and we like it. The second one, you know, the band had been together for a couple of years, so it's a lot more like the way we play live.
You know, okay.
There's a lot of interplay and stuff like that. It's always nice when that happens in the studio.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you're playing as a duo today. What would you say are the great things about a piano-guitar duo? And also, maybe, what are the challenges?
The great things about it are that it's easy to travel. Well, it's not easy to travel, but, I mean, it's easier with a duo to... We don't have as much stuff to cart around with us. But even the quartet, we have nothing. You know, because Joey Barron, the drummer...
He doesn't carry anything.
He carries a little bag of drumsticks and a small case with some clothes in it. Drew doesn't carry a bass because it's prohibitive. Bass players don't travel with their instruments anymore. So, and I carry a guitar that's about... this. It's very small. One of the things is the ease of traveling, but also it's nice to play without the bass and drums and to play in a more intimate setting, you know. You're more exposed, you hear more, you hear in a different way. You have to really listen hard, otherwise you'll lose the other person, you know.
I suppose maybe you can be more, there can be even more improvisation, presumably, in that setting.
I don't know if it's more improvisation, but there's, because it's so exposed and because there's a lot of extra air, because the bass and drums aren't there, there's a lot of avenues that are open for interplay that might not be quite as open with a quartet. Although, as a quartet, I think the interval of the level of interplay is quite high. But with the duo, it kind of even goes to another level. And we like that. We like that a lot. I mean, the magical moment for me, kind of in any music, is if you have a duo, but it sounds bigger than that, or a trio, and it sounds bigger than that. You know, whether it's, you know, early Bill Evans or vintage Jimi Hendrix, or whether it's us playing duo. And I remember, I mean, the first time I heard, I'm going back almost a half century, the first time I heard Eric Clapton and the Cream, you know, and I was like, wait a minute, that's only three guys? You know, that was, to me, that was amazing. Because to me, that means everybody's trying to make something that's greater than the sum of its parts, which is one of the nice things you can do with this music.
European tour. I have to say, I did a little bit of research and it was quite difficult to find out what you were doing, but I ended up with the European Jazz Network, which had all the list of the gigs. Mm-hmm. And it said you're playing in Barcelona tomorrow.
That's right.
It will be nicer in terms of temperature. I don't know about the audience, but yeah, be a great place to play. But I just wondered, do you two come to Europe often? And do you notice any, are there any noticeable differences between audiences here and, say, in the USA?
Yeah, they're larger.
What, in Europe or in Europe?
In Europe.
Oh, okay.
Much larger in general. And more, I don't know, it just seems to be, there's more interest in it, you know, in it. I don't know about jazz in general, but I know this kind of stuff we do. I mean, we don't work in America that much.
So
America is not a place that welcomes and supports jazz, even though that's where it comes from, you know.
That's really funny, because everyone here is like, gotta go to New York, that's where it is, that's where it's happening.
Well, there's a million clubs in New York, and you can hear music every night. But the minute you leave New York, you know, it used to be that, I mean, even as late as the 90s, there was a real circuit you could play of clubs in America. And now it's much, much harder. Having said that, what John said is basically true. In the last 2, 3, 4 years, a couple of things I've been doing, first of all, the band with John, and then also playing in trio with Gary Peacock, there's actually been quite a bit of work in the States. And this is kind of a nice development, but it's a little harder to put it together in general. And I think what's happening now is, it's something that's been going on for about, in the States, I think for about 20, 30 years, which is, you know, you'll have a sense in the media and in the public that jazz is dying, jazz is dead. And all of a sudden, one particular year, they'll seize on something. You know, it could be when they discovered Wynton Marsalis. It could be anything. But then they'll be, oh, jazz is alive and it's coming back, you know. And 4 or 5 years later, they do the same thing. So I think we're sort of, even though what John says is true, we've actually been working quite a bit in the States and we have more coming up. How long that'll last is anybody's guess. Thank you.
I've got quite a few questions, but I know you two guys are going to be going on stage soon, so I'll just try and pick out some of my top questions. And one of the ones I was going to ask, I was going to direct it to you, John. And one of my favourite all-time albums is by Peter Erskine called Motion Poet, and has some great arrangements on it, as well as top jazz musicians. You're obviously on it, so that's why I'm referring to it. And there's a tune called Hero with a Thousand Faces, and which features you on an open section playing a guitar, and I don't know if it's effects or a synth guitar, but it's definitely not an acoustic sound. But
no, it's a synthesizer guitar.
And it's quite free, and your lines are very improvised with your own language, and it works so well and contrasts well with the sax solo that follows. And I just wondered, do you feel you have your own voice on guitar? I mean, I think you do, and I think lots of people do. I teach in a conservatoire, and we were talking about you. It was something that some of the guitarists said about you having your own voice. And I wondered if that had that developed more when you started recording on the ECM level label, when you left some of those earlier bands that you'd been in with
Johnny Hammond Smith,
Billy Cobham Band, and the Brecker Brothers.
The bands of that era. I mean, the thing that you mentioned, this Johnny Hammond Smith was one of my first gigs playing jazz, and he was an older than me. I was only about like 19 years old or 20 years old when
just
I started
a few years
playing
ago.
With him.
Yeah,
and I always have fond memories of that gig. You know, I learned a lot from him, and then after that, everything went downhill. in terms of like musical development, because at that point I was trying to become a jazz musician. Jazz musicians wanted to play rock and roll because it was the thing to do. Mm. Miles Davis was doing it, or you know, a lot of people were doing it, so it became a thing to do, and it was a lot of fun. These sort of fusion bands, but it was hard to do anything except play as loud and fast as you possibly could. Mm. So once I left all that behind, then I got more in touch with what I wanted to do. I don't know about having a voice. I just know I have a way that I play. And I know how it feels and sounds when I do it. Other than that, I've never thought about it. And I don't know. I never thought about trying to have a voice. I mean, I've just always played. And all of a sudden you reach a point where you know who you are a little bit, you know. And if that's having a voice, I guess I have a voice, but I don't know if it's
characterful. It's like when you play, people say, oh, that's John. And you're the same as well. I was looking into some of your recordings, and you've recorded with actually an old friend of ours, Phil Robson, the guitarist. Uh-huh. He recorded on one of my first albums, I'm a Jazz Pianist. But also, you know, there's stuff about your playing as well. I noticed it said on somewhere that, you know, innovative harmony. But I think both of you are very, you know, you're not reeling off licks. I mean, you probably don't want to be doing that. But there's definitely, when you play, I think that's brilliant, you know, because you can say, well, that's definitely that person playing, you know. It's something that most people strive to do, I think, in their jazz careers.
I think, you know, I've got a real simple answer to that, but ever since I got into this music, I thought that's what this was supposed to be about. Mm. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't, which is a shame, you know. But to me, it's kind of the same answer John gave. It's just if you decide to be yourself. But in order to do that, you have to be able to find yourself, who you really are. John's always been great at that. I mean, the first time I played with him, it bowled me over. Because the musical integrity was so clear. You know, the lack of flash, the lack of BS. I don't know if you can say that on British radio or not.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so the lack of bullshit, the lack of, you know.
Yeah.
Not trying to impress audiences, all that, you know. And being in touch with something inside. It came across immediately. You know, it's had a big influence on me at the time. And, you know, once you find that, if you can find it, it's not that hard to do. But the thing is, to find that sometimes can be very challenging, you know, because there are financial pressures. There's stress, there's the pressure to succeed, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a drummer John and I used to know who passed away some years ago. And we were talking about it one day, and he said, it's like trying to wear somebody else's shoes. You know, why would you do that? They pinch, or they're too big.
You want to wear your own.
Exactly. But it's not so easy to do, but when you find it, it's just the only way to go.
I could sit here for another hour. We're not going to sit here. It's very close to when the audience is supposed to come in. I had lots of questions about your relationship with Kenny Wheeler and John Taylor, who I know you played with and who I absolutely loved. And I'm very sad that they're not around with us anymore. But I was going to talk about that, your relationship, the fact that you worked a bit with the Brit guitarists and stuff like that. But I think you've said some fantastic things. And I think I've got loads of CDs of that I can play on the show. So that'd be great. And I'm really, really pleased that you could give me, you know, 10, 15 minutes of your time.
Sure.
And nice to meet you. Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
That was jazz guitarist John Abercrombie and jazz pianist Mark Copeland. And they were just about to do their gig at the Watermill Jazz Club in Dorking. During that interview, you heard some tracks. So the first one I played was John Abercrombie's quartet from his album 39 Steps. That was a track called Green Street. Just to remind you, on his album, we had Mark Copeland on piano, Drew Gress on double bass, and Joey Barron on the drums. And then we heard a track with John Abercrombie called Hero with a Thousand Faces, which was a big band with some arrangements by Vince Mendoza and featured the likes of Brecker, and also it was actually an album put out by Peter Erskine. You've been listening to Andrea Vicari on Jazz London Radio, and this was Jazz Doodles.